Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Last night, Taoiseach Micheál Martin was in defence of his leadership at the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party meeting following the publishing of the Gavin report, which detailed the ins and outs of the near €400,000 spent on the presidential campaign. The review spreads the blame for the presidential debacle, noting multiple people from Fianna Fáil in the hierarchy there were aware of potential problems. We're joined on the line now by Taoiseach Micheál Martin. Taoiseach, good morning and welcome.
Good morning.
I want to talk to you, by the way, about the Gavin report and all of that in a moment or two. But first of all, you're on a mission over the coming days. You're going to Brussels for a council meeting, which may be far more important than anything we talk about here at home. What's on the agenda?
Well, what's on the agenda, obviously, is Ukraine in particular. We expect probably to be updating in terms of the potential negotiations that are underway in terms of a ceasefire peace settlement, also the immobilized Russian assets, and the proposal from the European Commission to use those, if you like, for the reconstruction of Ukraine and for financially supporting Ukraine over the next 2 years. I've taken a position in Ireland of supporting that process because we believe that there has to be some deterrence to countries who violate the UN Charter and who aggressively invade a country, undermine their territorial integrity and sovereignty, and then destroy it through bombings and attacks and destroy energy and civilian infrastructure and kill and are resulting for thousands of deaths. And it can't be the case that European taxpayers come in and pick up the tab all of the time. Now, there are complexities attached to that. People have concerns about it, but overall, the European taxpayer is stretched. There's limits to what it can do to financially continue supporting Ukraine, and particularly the reconstruction of Ukraine, which we want to do and we want to be a part of that. And also then the whole issue of accession of Ukraine to the European Union, which we have strongly advocated from the very, very beginning. Mm. Geopolitically, it makes sense and it gives some sense of security. Yeah. To Ukraine in the aftermath of a peace settlement. Yeah.
Now, we in Europe have been criticised for not being tough enough with Vladimir Putin, but are we maybe not tough enough with Donald Trump? Because, we bow to his diktats on tariffs and all the rest of it, and his behaviour towards Ukraine is pretty despicable. But yet, I suppose we feel we have to defer to the United States as a very important trading partner.
Yeah, there are significant shifts happening in the geopolitical world. And I think the evaluating all of this, what's clear is Europe has to become far more self-reliant economically, security-wise, defence-wise. And the old order is no longer as certain as it once was. I would pay tribute to the European leadership and Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom, with Emmanuel Macron, Frederic Merz, George Meloni, and indeed the Commission, Ursula von der Leyen and Antonio Costa, for keeping US within that Western orbit in respect of Ukraine up to now. To be fair to President Trump, he has a very fundamental view of war. He wants war to stop. And he
not in Venezuela, he doesn't, it would appear.
Okay, I take that point, but I mean more generally, I've read some stuff in the first government of Donald Trump. It's very clear he believes war to be irrational in terms of the war. Take, for example, that hundreds of thousands of people have lost their lives in Ukraine. No, that's and so that motivation, I think, is a positive. On the other hand, settling disputes of this kind is not simple. And the idea that, Russia would have certain control over areas of, and territories of Ukraine, something that's very, very difficult for anybody to accept, particularly areas that Russia have not conquered.
Hi, Anton Savage here from News Talk. Now, if you're a parent, you'll know the school question comes up again and again. Where's the right fit? Somewhere that's not just about grades, but where your kids actually enjoy learning and feel part of something. Nord Anglia International School, Dublin. It's actually Ireland's only IB continuum school, so kids can start there at 3 years of age and stay right through to 18 following the International Baccalaureate, which is recognised worldwide. The school is known as a warm, inclusive international community. Kids are encouraged to be curious, to try new things, and to build the confidence that'll carry them through life. So if you're curious, have a look yourself. Head to naisdublin.com. That's naisdublin.com. Now, I hope you enjoy your podcast.
Now, many people do confuse military neutrality with national defence. Now, where are we at the moment in that? Because I read that we're negotiating with the French on a government-to-government deal and using the French military procurement service to get ourselves some ground radar, which would be hugely beneficial to us. But do you understand where some people are saying if we militarise, we're putting ourselves in jeopardy?
I don't understand that argument. I think we have to have the very basic in terms of primary radar. That's a basic. And the reason where there's been a European procurement process which one can do, inviting other countries in that context then to join venture with you, and I think the French have been selected. I think that's good. It means we can accelerate the procurement of something that's a basic need so that we understand what's happening in our waters, in our air, and on land. That can't happen quick enough as far as I'm concerned. I initiated that when I was Minister of Defence. It's honest to follow through. We just need to get that done. But there are challenges in European defence at the moment because of the Russian-Ukraine war, which has meant huge pressure on the defence industry. But these are very basic things. We have to protect ourselves as a country. And we have to protect ourselves, particularly our economic security. Critical undersea infrastructure is a key vulnerability of all states, but particularly ours, in terms of our gas connection with the UK and the interconnectors, and then the subsea cables. We have to protect our ports and make sure our ports are resilient from a security point of view. 80% of trade goes through Dublin port. And maybe historically we haven't looked at things through that security lens as perhaps we should have. We are now, and we have, and if you recall a forum I developed some years ago as foreign minister, and there was a lot of opposition to it. Louise Richardson chaired it. And that was identifying the modern day security challenges facing the world. And they are, as I say, critical sea undersea infrastructure. Cybersecurity is a very significant threat to both public utilities and also to private sector companies and businesses across the world.
We have, I suppose, awakened from our neutrality slumbers to the possibility that we have to be independent in defence of our territory. I want to go back now to the Gavin report. You've been talking about it, obviously, since that very long parliamentary party meeting last night. A few extraordinary things have come about. Before his nomination, you, it appeared, only had one detailed conversation with Jim Gavin.
Sorry, well, yeah, I mean, in the context of the presidency, I met with him for quite a lengthy period, for a number of hours. Prior to that, I would have met him, obviously, at the Northeasterner City events, an event that I attended with him.
But also in the context of the presidency.
In the context of the presidency, yes. It was through June, July, party officials had met with him. I thought he had prospects, if I'm honest, at the time, because of his background. Not just a sporting background, but his defence background, which showed a level of competency and capability that was important. And also his role in the Citizens' Assembly, which was very competently handled as he chaired it. Also the North Eastern City feedback, very positive. Any informal soundings I took with people who worked him in all those different spheres were very, very positive about Jim Gavin's capability, dependability, and so on like that. So that was the context. And in advance of that, to be frank, we didn't have candidates on the table in June or July from within the parliamentary party, certainly.
Yeah, now we did talk about this before, and you said no one in the parliamentary party was putting their hand up. And then I mentioned Bertie Ahern, who's outside the parliamentary party. Mm. And of course, Billy Kelleher, he was kind of one foot in and then one foot out, and then ultimately back in again to compete with Jim Gavin for the nomination. But when we talked about Bertie Ahern, you did say, well, if you're talking about investigating, you know, people's financial affairs, the Fianna Fáil party didn't really want to go back there with Bertie.
That was my sense, and the soundings I took confirmed that, and indeed polling confirmed that, and also we got very negative feedback in August, just from the general public generally talking around. I don't mean that like in a negative. These are facts that are there that would have been resurrected, notwithstanding his outstanding role in achieving peace on the island of Ireland. I've said that to you before. That's one of the greatest achievements of any politician in the history of the Irish state. And his tenacity and his commitment to peace on the island and getting the Good Friday Agreement over the line with Tony Blair, with all of the leaders in Northern Ireland at that time, is a stellar achievement. Yeah.
But I mean, it would have been down, but if he could have sought the nomination, it would have been down to the parliamentary party to decide on whether or not he had a chance and therefore to give him the nod or not. He never had that chance.
He never, I don't think he hit, there was a critical mass of coming forward saying we want to nominate Bertie either, you know. That's the other side of it. And when I spoke to people afterwards, they didn't feel that was an option.
Now, the question of Jim Gavin, you said you met him kind of socially and these other business affairs, and then you had that detailed conversation with him. And someone like Billy Keller, whom you've known all your political life, I suppose, and you figured that Jim Gavin's chances were better than Billy's at that stage. And I know Billy wasn't really in the frame when he thought it was going to be other, but, you know, it seems like a rather...
Billy's a very fine parliamentarian. I have no issue with Billy whatsoever. I mean, I worked with Billy. He did a lot of good work for the party at the time when he was one of those that went forward in 2011 and did huge work for the party in rebuilding the party, and then has been a very strong European parliamentarian. But maybe I got the wrong steer in the 14th of August when Billy communicated to my chief of staff, Deirdre Gland, saying, you know, it was a matter unimportant to him in a message. He wanted me to run, and he said he had no personal skin in the game. So I took from that that Billy certainly wasn't in the race. But then, look, the communications between us could have been better in July and August. A phone call would have been useful, I would have thought. I just make that point to say what's happening or whatever. And that's something I don't want to be raking over the coals of that.
Sure.
Because I think,
Fellow Corkman constituency colleague and so on.
Yeah, but I had no sense in August because of that message that Billy was in the race at all. In fact, the opposite would have been the message I've got from that.
Now, the questions about Deirdre Gilland being told there was an issue, Fiona Sheehan making inquiries, and those inquiries became more specific as time went on. And the question is, did Deirdre or did anybody in the party alert you to the fact that there was something in the wind, even though Jim Gavin was asked again and again, is there any issue that we need to know about? And once, twice, thrice, four times, five times, he said, no, nothing to worry about. At what point did they tell you, listen, there is something to worry about?
Deirdre Gilland would have said to me that Fiona Sheehan has rang this one, I think it was either the day of the vote, and said, basically, he says, do you know anything about a tenant issue? And Deirdre said, no, I don't. I'm going to have to stack it up, he said. And then he said that, did you guys do your due diligence? And Deirdre said, we did. That was it. We can't go on gossip or rumours. Lots of rumours come in about candidates. Lots of queries come in. But that was put to Jim Gavin. That was put to Jim Gavin. He said he never had an issue with a tenant. That was the response.
I can understand that if you're thinking of running a candidate for the presidency, if you don't trust him, you shouldn't be running him anyway.
Yeah, and all the feedback, look, I have to be careful what I said, but all the feedback was to the effect that this guy was, you know, and I think this is something he might have buried in his own head, whatever, and I think he said that in his statement afterwards when he pulled out of the race. It happened, you know, some time ago and so on like that. But I think what probably many of the officials who would have spoken to him about this, he was very clear and adamant that there was no issue. In fact, in a later one, he said he never had a journalist as a tenant. Well, maybe he wasn't aware that the tenant was.
Yeah, well, that's possibly true. People don't necessarily wear that on their sleeves. Have you spoken to Jim Gavin since he dropped out of the race or since the report?
I haven't. I've made attempts, but I haven't. I think he probably wants time out from it all. Yeah. And I can understand that too, because it's a very difficult, traumatic period for him. He has achieved an awful lot in his life. And this was a very difficult and traumatic experience for him. And
Is it fair to characterise his entry into this whole process as one that started with him through Keith Barr rather than someone in Fianna Fáil saying, that fella Jim Gavin who managed Dublin to such success that did the Citizens' Assembly, he'd be a good candidate. Is it fair to say that Jim Gavin raised his hand first?
Yes, probably, yeah. But Keepower, I don't know whether Keepower was doing it on behalf of Jim when he contacted Jack Chambers or not. But he indicated, my understanding is he might have indicated to Jack that Jim Gavin could be interested. And let's be straight, like, I mean, the feedback was very, very positive about Jim Gavin at that time, in the immediate aftermath of his nomination. And that was, I mean, that's been forgotten about now, but many, many people were telling me, great choice. You've got a good one there.
Even though Jim Gavin, you know, he was never one for courting the media or being very open during his managerial stint at Dublin. In fact, it was hard to get anything out of him. I had seen him address gatherings, and he was very good at that kind of thing, you know, making a speech. But in terms of engaging with the media, and that's one of the key processes that happens right throughout a presidential campaign. And by the way,
I take your point. And on the other hand, he did win five All-Irelands because he didn't let the cat out of the bag in respect of tactics and strategy and so on. He did say that to me at the time, that like he understood the difference and that he was up for the difference, and that as a manager, you're defensive mode, you're protecting your team, you're protecting your all of that. So in other words, he felt that was a strategic approach that he took at the time in the context that he was operating in at the time.
Now, you know, the talk of a no-confidence motion, and it's dead in the water, it would appear, at the moment. But to borrow an old phrase that you would remember politically, the mongrel foxes seem out to get you.
Well, look, the Fianna Fáil Parliamentary Party has always been a robust party. There's been a very strong tradition of straight talking. And that's important. I've always tolerated that, by the way. And you know that since 2011, you know, I've had people having a go, which is fair enough. And invariably, as a leader, you're trying to advance and improve and increase the number of seats we have and so on like that. And that does mean sometimes tensions develop within constituencies. It develops in terms of how candidates get nominated. It's the cut and thrust of political leadership, and I understand that. I also understand that people are very, very annoyed with what happened and very angry with what happened, and I accept that too, and I'm sorry for what happened, and I take responsibility for what happened.
But do you take the blame? I mean,
I do. I mean, look, ultimately the buck stops with me in relation to matters of this kind. We had a very good general election. People were very happy for me to lead the party into the general election. And I'm very conscious that I received a mandate to become Taoiseach. And I'm very conscious as well, as a party, we have to deliver for the Irish people. And we have to balance understandable, legitimate, evaluation of how we perform. But equally, we have to perform for the country in terms of policies and focus on issues like the kind that we were talking about, in a very internationally difficult arena, economically, protecting our economic enterprise base, developing greater prioritisation and disability, child poverty, and the infrastructure delivery. And I've not, the one thing I can say categorically, I've not allowed any of this to divert me from my duties and my obligations as a Taoiseach to the people of Ireland.
What do you make of Pat the Cope Gallagher saying this isn't over yet?
Well, Pat's entitled to have his views on that. As far as I'm concerned, I'm retaining my focus on the issues facing the country, and I'm going to be determined to do that. I'll give every hour of every day doing that.
You know that line about the Lincoln assassination, and besides what happened, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? And I feel like asking you, how was the Christmas party after your marathon meeting?
I got there a bit late, and I think people have moved on, except one guy who wanted me to sign a book on your book on the Taoiseach, and for his father, who's a good admirer of mine, apparently, in County Clare.
And finally, I should ask you, will you be able to take the new Dassault jet to Brussels?
No, not this week. I think the Air Corps have to do commissioning and so on like that. That'll take another while, so that'll be in the new year. But I think that's for the future. It's a proper thing to do.
And you're confident you'll be the man taking the jet, not somebody else?
There'll be many more after me who'll be taking the jet, and I'll be taking it too. So that's the way it is.
Martin,
I think it was needed because of the
situation
we had for the last decade or so. I mean, it was not...
Unreliability affecting delivery. Anyway, Micheál Martin, you've got a job of work to do in Brussels, and thank you very much for taking the time out to be with us on the show this morning.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.